This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to talk to one of our favorite guests. We've talked to him several times over the years. He's Dr. Daniel Amen. He is a developer of the Amen Clinics, and he's author of numerous books. His latest book is entitled Change Your Brain, Change Your Grades. And as we know, this is a proficiency culture. Like it or not, test scores mean upward mobility and income, and people spend inordinate amounts of time and money on test prep, but not just kids, but also adults, people applying for better jobs, people applying for advanced degrees. It's all about your test proficiency. And Dr. Amen's latest book, Change Your Brain, Change Your Grades, provide science-based strategies to boost memory, strength, and focus, and study faster. Dr. Amen has written 70 professional articles, 7 book chapters, and more than 30 books, including the number one New York Times bestsellers, The Daniel Plan and Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. He's also appeared on the public broadcasting system with a very, very exciting series about brain health. He's with us to discuss strategies for improving your mental performance. So it's a pleasure having you on the program, Dr. Amen.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. What a joy to hear from you again.
And by the way, his training is in psychiatry. He's a board-certified psychiatrist, he is an innovator in neuroscience research. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about brain scans, because that's really what you have distinguished your career around, SPECT scanning to address brain optimization, right?
Yeah, for the last 28 years, we have been using brain SPECT imaging to help us understand and treat our patients, and it revolutionized virtually every aspect of my life. When I started looking at how the brain works, I realized as a psychiatrist, we're the only medical doctors that never look at the organ they treat. And that's a little crazy when you think about it. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I had to get my brain right if I wanted my mind right. And so, we've now built the world's largest database of brain scans related to behavior. We have 160,000 scans on people from 121 countries. And they're just so instructive. You really shouldn't let your child hit a soccer ball with their head. Playing football is a brain damaging sport. So why would you do that if it's making them less likely to be a good dad or to be able to save money? Because those are brain functions. And if you hurt your brain, you virtually hurt everything in your life. And I trained at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. And even though I'm a double board certified psychiatrist, board certified in child and adolescent psychiatry and also general psychiatry, there was virtually nothing about how to optimize the brain so that you optimize the mind. And so, the imaging work just changed all of that.
So one interesting aspect of the field of psychiatry is that, you know, whereas in medicine, you know, we have all kinds of imaging studies, we have all kinds of blood tests, we have ways of targeting our therapies. In psychiatry, unfortunately, with a lot of psychiatric problems and brain disorders, it's a matter of trial and error when we apply therapies. So it really it's a little bit like flying blind. There's no blood test, for example, that tells you whether you have attention deficit disorder or depression. There's no way to quantitate schizophrenia there's not even a test that tells you, other than some sort of intelligence test, to tell you whether you're developing dementia.
Right. And before I went to medical school, I was an infantry medic and then an x-ray technician. And our professors used to always say, how do you know unless you look? And so when I fell in love with psychiatry, I went, well, of course you should look. The brain is our organ. You know, psychiatrists and neurologists got divorced in the 1920s. And neurologists took the brain and psychiatrists took the mind. And I just think it was a bad divorce. The brain clearly is involved in ADHD, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. And what the scans teach you is every single psychiatric disorder is not a single or simple disorder. That depression is like chest pain. There's 1,000 causes for chest pain. Mm-hmm. And likewise, there are many different causes for depression. But what happens now, 85% of psychiatric drugs are prescribed by non-psychiatric physicians in 7-minute office visits. And once you start these things, they're really hard to stop. And I'm like, well, how do you know if this person's brain's working too hard or not hard enough, if they've had traumatic brain injury, if they have an infection or an environmental toxin? And when you look, you start actually asking smarter questions rather than thinking depression is a unitary diagnosis. When you start imaging, you realize, well, that's mm-hmm. just stupid. You should not start everybody on Prozac or, you know, an SSRI, because they drop brain function, which is helpful if your brain works too hard. But what if your brain doesn't work hard enough? You're really going to drop brain function and just inhibit people? And it's why virtually all psychiatric drugs have black box warnings from the FDA. They hurt people. When you give them to the wrong person, to the right person, it can save their life. But this idea of flying blind, I'm just not okay. And it's gotten me plenty of haters. But it's like, really, you're not going to look. You're just going to diagnose someone based on symptoms. No wonder nobody trusts you, because the stigma around psychiatric illness is still really high. And in 1979, when I told my dad I wanted to be a psychiatrist, he asked me why I didn't want to be a real doctor, why I wanted to be a nut doctor and hang out with nuts all day long. And it hurt my feelings. But 40 years later, I really get what he was saying. It's how do you trust a profession that never looks at the organ it treats?
Indeed. Well, there's a phrase that's been coined about neurology. You know, people have all kinds of god-awful neurological problems, and they get scanned, they get, MRIs, and sometimes SPECT scans. And this is a coin that I didn't term. This is a coin that's been termed by one of our good colleagues, Dr. David Perlmutter. It's diagnose and adios. We can see lesions in the brain, or we can see problems with the white matter, or you know, history of infarcts, mini strokes. But then there's not a lot we can do. So you seem to be not enamored with the drug paradigm, and I'm sure you use it judiciously where appropriate. But what are some of the other potential interventions once we see that there is a brain imbalance?
So many exciting things that you can do. So a number of years ago, I realized if you want to keep your brain healthy or rescue it if it's headed to the dark place, you have to prevent or treat the 11 major risk factors that steal your mind. And we know what they are. and I have a mnemonic called Bright Minds. So, for example, B is for blood flow. Low blood flow is the number one brain imaging predictor of Alzheimer's disease. It's also associated with depression, ADHD, and schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. So what is it we can do to improve your blood flow? So now here's where functional medicine comes in. You absolutely have to be working on someone's heart at the same time you work on someone's brain. What a concept. Mm-hmm. That exercise is really important to your mental health. Going in a hyperbaric chamber actually has been shown to increase blood flow to the brain. I published a study on soldiers who are involved in blast injuries. Mm-hmm. Supplements like ginkgo increase blood flow. Foods like rosemary and beets, oregano, cayenne pepper, all increase blood flow. So, you know, we just talked about exercise, hyperbaric oxygen, diet, supplementation, and that's only one of the risk factors. The R is retirement and aging. When you stop learning, your brain starts dying. And I published a study last year in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease on 62,454 scans on how the brain ages. And it's bad news. The older you get, the less blood flow you have to your brain. And so I often say the older you get, the more serious you need to be about taking care of the health of your brain. So new learning is important. And then all the anti-aging strategies. So for example, if you have high ferritin levels or high iron levels, you need to go donate blood and probably cut out red meat, because you don't want to have high iron. It promotes aging. But if you have low iron, you absolutely want to supplement. Then healthy red meat, I'm completely fine with, because low iron goes with being tired, having ADHD symptoms, being anemic. So this brain-body connection, which I did not get at all in my training, but I only learned from, it's like, oh, the brain is an organ, like your heart is an organ. If I take care of my body, my brain is going to be better. And that's how we go after it. So diet, supplementation, mm-hmm. exercise, whatever we can to increase the health of your brain in a way that never hurts you. So both you and I in medical school, they taught us first do no harm. And that's not what's happening in psychiatry today. They're giving people medication that they're having trouble stopping, that in fact, in many cases, especially with benzos, harm the brain.
Right.
If you go on benzodiazepines, it actually increases your risk of dementia. Well, I knew that 20 years ago, because I'd like to go, oh, here's someone on Xanax. Their brain looks like they're a drinker. That it's not increasing the health of your brain.
And you can actually see, visualize these changes on a SPECT scan. For our listening audience who hasn't, I refer them to your books, your many books, to see some of these really dramatic images. But give us kind of a word picture of what a SPECT scan looks like, and what are the indications of an abnormal brain on a SPECT scan.
So SPECT looks at blood flow and activity. It's different than a CAT scan or an MRI. Those generally are structural scans that show what the brain actually physically looks like. So it's sort of like if you pop the hood of a car engine, it'll show you what the engine actually looks like. SPECT looks at blood flow, and it basically tells us three things: good activity, too little, or too much. And then our job is to
balance it. And it's color-coded. The pictures are actually really quite beautiful. I mean, you could hang them in the Museum of Modern Art. I mean, because they denote by their colors levels of brain activity, at blood flow, but also energetic activity. Isn't that the case?
Metabolic activity, you bet. And I agree with you. I think they're stunningly beautiful. And they're really giving you a window into someone's soul. Is there, you know, I think of the brain as the hardware of the soul. And is it working too hard, as it often does in people who have OCD, or people have an inflammation, like the woman who wrote Brain on Fire? Or is it really low in activity that we often see in people who have mold exposure? Or a chronic infection like Lyme that they may have had for 10 or 15 years. And you can see how healthy it is, how young it is. I published another study on 46,000 scans on the difference between male and female brains. That's so instructive. That female brains tend to be much busier. And it's why they go to jail 14 times less than males. Right. So they go to jail way less than males because they have way more anxiety and they think about the future more than males. But it also gives them a higher risk of depression and anxiety disorders. So understanding, I can sort of, you know, by looking at a scan, go, oh, this person's probably about this old. And it's a male or a female, and then you can look at the health. And one of the big lessons I learned early on is alcohol is not a health food. Is that drinkers have smaller brains and more toxic looking brains than non-drinkers, even the drinkers where it's not a problem, right? They have two, three drinks a day.
Social drinkers.
Their brains are not healthy. Their brains are not healthy. And so, you know, it wasn't popular. My first clinic was right outside the Napa Valley in Northern California. And I'm like, you know, and they were promoting alcohol as a health food. And I'm like, probably a bad idea. And now society is promoting marijuana as innocuous. In fact, in the last presidential debate, Cory Booker asked Joe Biden whether or not he was high because Biden hadn't bought in to, you know, let's just legalize this and make it available everywhere. You know, he said, what are you smoking? Which I thought was just so demeaning because I published a study on 1,000 pot smokers. Every area of their brain was lower in blood flow.
Apropos of that, I think we probably should demand that our presidential candidates get a SPECT scan through the AMEN clinics prior to announcing their candidacy. I think that'd be very interesting.
I wrote an op-ed piece for the LA Times in 2008 making just that point. Don't you want to know the person who has the nuclear code, whether or not their brain works right? But you got to do it on both sides. I'm just not seeing a lot of healthy brains.
It's an equal opportunity thing. So who is a candidate for this type of screening? I mean, it sounds fascinating. I mean, I don't feel that I particularly have a lot of brain problems, but I, you know, would I be a candidate to get a SPECT scan just to, you know, kind of get a, like a brain checkup, you know, like you might do an electrocardiogram or a chest X-ray or something along those lines?
So when I turned 50, my doctor wanted me to have a colonoscopy. I asked him why he didn't want to look at my brain. Wasn't the other end of my body just as important? And Alzheimer's disease is expected to quadruple. We're living longer, which means we're going to have a greater burden on our society. Why don't we screen the brain? It's the most important organ, right? You can virtually transplant everything else, just not your brain. And we don't screen it. And I think SPECT is a marvelous screening tool because it'll tell us 20 years before you get Alzheimer's disease if you are headed to the dark place. And would you want to know? Well, according to a study from GE, 75% of people would want to know even if there was nothing they could do about it. And what I argue in my books, especially Memory Rescue, what I argue is there's absolutely things you can do about it. Every day you're making your brain better, you're making it worse. If you want, so when you know, so when you see your scan, if you come to a New York clinic, if you see your scan, you're going to fall in love with your brain and then you're going to be better to it. And nobody has a relationship with their brain. We have relationships with our bellies, with our butts, with our faces, with our breasts, but nobody has a relationship with their brain. And I would argue that's the most important relationship you have, bar none, because if your brain's not right, you're not going to be your best self.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the kind of thing where, you know, you may want to put a picture of your SPECT scan, you know, with a refrigerator magnet on your refrigerator door so that, you know, every time you go in there looking for some, you know, doing a little midnight foraging, you may want to think twice about what you put in your GI tract, because it's going to have a bearing on your brain. And, you know, I think that's just a teachable moment for a lot of patients.
And it's one of the reasons I fell in love with it, that it stigma went down immediately because they see their problems as medical and not moral. Compliance went up because they wanted a better brain. And forgiveness and compassion for yourself, when you know you've not been your best and now you have at least in part an explanation why, and forgiveness and compassion from families. And because people see these things as medical, and you know, stigma hasn't gone down one bit since I've been a psychiatrist, except for our patients, because stigma goes way down because people go, I had this boy from Hong Kong who came to see me, and his mother had a very difficult birth with him, and he had school problems and behavior problems and mood problems. And it was very clear he had anoxia. Mm-hmm. He had a low oxygen from his birth, and his brain had been damaged. And when he saw it, he started to cry. And then he looked at his mother, and he said, it's not me. It's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. And he just got cooperative after that to be engaged in the treatment. Now, how do you get there when you don't look at the organ? How do you get there from a clinical interview? And he'd seen like six psychiatrists in China and none of it worked for him. And so because of the anoxia, we put him in a hyperbaric chamber, put him on fish oil, put him on supplements to increase blood flow to his brain. And he just graduated from college last year. I'm so proud of him, but it's not okay to fly blind. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the 40,000 psychiatrists in the U.S., all of the psychologists, marriage and family counselors, are just not even thinking about the brain, and they call me crazy. So,
yeah, well, you're maybe a little too far ahead of the cutting edge. But it would be interesting, and I think you probably have done this, is you have done the you've done baseline tests, you performed the interventions. A year or two later, are there demonstrable changes that show progress in terms of metabolic activity in parts of the brain that weren't functioning normally?
Well, if you do the right thing, you'll actually see a difference the next day. I have a mixed martial artist who had a really bad brain, 25, and was suicidal and been arrested.
Took a lot of
and
hits.
His brain was really low.
Brain and injury.
And his brain was terrible. And I don't know if you and I talked about it, but I did the big NFL study when the NFL was having trouble with the truth. In 2009, we had scanned 300 active and retired NFL players, and 80% of our players show improvement on scans in as little as 2 months. And so I knew that. And so I said, you know your brain can get better. I just don't know how fast. So I put him on omega-3 fatty acids, something we make called Focus and Energy, along with a really great multiple vitamin and nutrients like ginkgo to boost blood flow. And I scanned him 2.5 hours after he took it the next day, and his brain showed significant improvement.
Literally within
hours.
Now,
it didn't mean it. Fixed it.
Yeah.
Literally within hours. Yep. It didn't mean it fixed it, but what it meant is his brain could respond. And how exciting is that? Nobody knows that.
Yep.
Is you're not stuck with the brain you have, that you could make it better. So if you came and we looked and it was great, we just celebrate and you do what you do. But if it's not as good as it could be, you get a little bit obsessed about it and then it could be better. Lisa Gibbons is a friend of mine. She's a media personality and I love her. I scanned her when she was 51. She was going through a hard time and she lets me talk about this. And her brain looked terrible. Well, her mother and grandmother died with Alzheimer's disease. And when I saw the scan, I'm like, you're headed for the dark place. But, you know, one of the reasons I love her is she's so smart and she just did everything I asked her to do. Well, we scanned her last year as part of a project. So this is 10 years later, her brain's much healthier. And if she would have never looked, she would have never known, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't know a train is going to hit you, you don't get off the track. But if you know a train is going to hit you, the first thing you do is get off the track.
Yeah, it's extremely motivational. Okay, at this point, let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. The book, the latest book, because Dr. Amen, our guest today, has written multiple books. He's written Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, and Healing Attention Deficit Disorder, The Brain Warrior's Way, and, you know, too many books to enumerate. But the current book is Change Your Brain, Change Your Grades. And we're going to examine the proposition that we can systematically enhance our performance on tests. The secrets for successful students, science-based strategies to boost memory, strengthen focus, and study faster. That'll be our focus in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.